This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Stories of New Americans tonight. I'm here joined by somebody from a country that I think really shows how diverse St. Louis has become in the last 20 years. My guest is Hassan Pirmambetov from Uzbekistan. So welcome, Hassan.
Hi, thank you.
I thought it might be helpful to talk about a little bit about your country, the historical background, where it's located in the world, in order to give some context, and then we can move into your personal story. So, because I think your story is really interesting, but I want people to get the full background of where you came from in order to appreciate where you are right now and how much you've overcome. So let's start by where Uzbekistan is on the map. What are some of the countries around it?
Uzbekistan on the Central Asia, where border with the five countries, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan.
Okay.
That Central Asia.
Central Asia. And go ahead.
We're on the Silk Road, on the middle of Silk Road, which one Silk Road come from China to
Turkey and
from all of them, yeah.
Okay, four of those five countries you mentioned are former Soviet republics, as is Uzbekistan, right?
We are all of them, yes.
Yeah. You know. So Afghanistan was not part of the USSR, no. But the other four countries were. What else can you tell us about the country? What's the population? What's the major religion?
Uzbekistan is like we're Muslim country, like we're most of Muslim, Sunni, okay. And we have right now over 36 million population.
Okay. And you mentioned the Silk Road.
Yes.
That was many years ago when that was a main thoroughfare between China and parts west. So that was it is in Uzbekistan,
yes.
Samarkand?
Yes.
Okay. And I think all or part of Uzbekistan was also ruled by Genghis Khan and the Mongols at one time in Middle Ages. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
From the Mongol, after that, we have some king, Amur Timur.
Okay. And then Uzbekistan probably was forcibly incorporated into the Soviet Union in the 20s, and it was a part of the Soviet Union until, I guess, 1991?
Yes, we start inviting from 17 to 1928. 1917, they start like, we're fighting with them, but we lose the war, and they invite us.
They invaded you.
Soviet Union.
Yeah. Now, I think you told me that, tell me the name of the town where you were born.
I am from the city, Chirchik. Chirchik, it is from 15 miles from the capital city, Tashkent.
Okay. Capital city, Tashkent. And I think we talked earlier and I read that at least in the Soviet days, Tashkent, the capital of Tashkent, was about 50% ethnic Russian, even though it was in Uzbekistan, right?
Right.
And I think we talked about how that is representative of what, I guess, mostly Stalin did in the Soviet Union, which was moving people around to kind of control them, I guess, right?
Right.
I remember about 20 years ago in St. Louis, there was a wave of refugees, mostly that came from Uzbekistan, but they were ethnic Turks. We call them Meshkedian Turks, I think.
Meshkedian.
Who had been living, were they living near the border with Georgia? Is that right?
Right. They are on the mountain, Georgia, that Kafka side.
And then in order to, I guess, neutralize any power they would have allying with neighboring countries against the Soviet regime. They were forcibly moved to Uzbekistan and other places.
Right.
And then the Russians that went into Tashkent, were they forced to go there too, or did some of them choose to, do you think, in the Soviet days?
Yes, they send it, they mix it up. Most of them, Soviet Union time, they mix the Russians with any country, like any other countries, they mix it. Like not only Kazakhstan, only Kazakhs or something, they mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to mix it, and they send the pupils, like Russians, before, if you graduate the university or some or teacher, you can choose, I'm going to go to work in my city or on here. Government going to send you where you have to go to mm-hmm. work.
And then, so you grew up in Chirchik, what's the town called, Chirchik?
Chirchik.
Chirchik. And did you, was your schooling in Russian language or Uzbek language, or both?
Both. I started the Russian, finishing with the Uzbek.
Okay. So Russian was, I guess, the official language of all of the Soviet Union, right? But then were you the people of Uzbekistan, were they able to speak Uzbek in business, at home, and in school, or was it required to speak Russian, at least?
No, you have to speak Russian, but you can speak in Uzbek too.
Mm-hmm. Everybody had to learn how to speak Russian.
Yes, but first language is Russian.
Okay. And then when you went to elementary school, when you started out of school, was that, were the teachers speaking
Russian?
Oh, they were speaking Russian. So did you learn, did you know Russian when you started school, or did you learn it there at school?
At the school.
So you grew up speaking Uzbek at home?
Yes.
That's wild. Okay. Well, let's talk more about your school days. Tell me about what you studied in school, how big the classes were, what was it like?
Like everybody go to school, start studying Russian language.
Is there a lot of homework every day?
We have after school classes. And then to 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. after school finish, about 1 p.m. and after 1 p.m. 30-minute lunch, and then everybody go into classroom, and we sitting, and all homework we do at the school to 5 to 6 o'clock.
Mm.
That's the 5 days a week.
5 days a week.
And Saturdays, no after class school, but only to 1 p.m. you have a school daytime.
Mm.
6 days every week.
Did you walk to school? Was there a bus?
Yes. No, I walk. School like 1 mile maybe,
mm-hmm.
around 1 mile.
And then we talked a little bit about this before, the level of respect that teachers get in your country compared to some other places. What is the relationship between teachers and students?
Oh, like. What you mean?
Like when I, for example, I taught English in Japan, and I taught in junior high school, and when I would enter the classroom, the students all had to stand up and bow to me. And, you know, obviously American kids don't do that, but I think you were talking about teachers have a more level of respect.
Oh, yeah. Every morning when you come to school, we have a 15-minute the exercise outside for everybody,
mm-hmm.
is young, high school, elementary, doesn't everybody at the school. We do it after that, everybody go into classrooms, and the teacher coming up, we stand up. And all class, like, yell hello to teacher. And when she left, we have to say something, yell, bye-bye.
Is that still happening in Uzbekistan today, do you think?
If be honest with you, I don't know these days how it's going, but...
Been a long time.
Soviet Union teach us like that.
Mm. And let's talk about sports. You told me, obviously, soccer was popular, but what other sports did you do?
Well, I've been gymnast.
Gymnast.
Gymnast. I've been like that.
How far did you take it? Did you compete in the region or in the nationwide?
No, at the city.
In the city?
At the city. Okay. I don't go so far. By the city.
Okay. What was your image of America in those days when you were a child? Did you learn about America in school? And if so, what did they tell you America was like?
No, at the school we always listen about bad stories about America.
Bad stories, and, like what?
Too many, like slavery, all bad things, gangsters, mm-hmm. shooting every day, robbering, some all bad stories. And I see everything on the movies. I know all America, but when I come to the United States, I see with my eyes, it is totally wrong. Mm. They give us information when we child.
So did you, when you were a child, did you ever think you would come here? Did you want to come here to see for yourself? Or were you kind of afraid of what you thought it would be like?
No, I think coming up, but I have a like, my dream, it is only dream, because Soviet Union time, even go to neighbor country, even, or Bulgaria is not so easy too. Even Bulgaria is next to Russia, like close. It is not so easy. Mm-hmm. Only we can go, like, if you be military, you can go to Germany, or what is the military base, which one country, you can go outside the Soviet Union. Otherwise, you can go somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like close Soviet Union.
And then you were probably in junior high school when Uzbekistan became independent from the Soviet Union, or when the Soviet Union broke up, right?
Right.
Can you remember how that happened? Were there protests? Was it a peaceful transition? Was there anything happening in your area that was sort of?
No, I don't see in my city, but some protests on the capital city, Tashkent, some protests, but not too much. But most of them, they left when they broke up. That time, we say first secretary of the country. We don't have a president Soviet Union time. We have only first secretary. Who been first secretary, they come in president when independent countries, and they stay.
So is it kind of relatively peaceful transition to independence? Not a lot of fighting or violence or protests?
No, we don't have a war or something. Okay. Fighting is just independent, easy.
How did things change in everyday life after independence? Under the Soviets, I know you had to speak Russian, and or people had learned how to speak Russian and use Russian. After Uzbekistan became independent, did people focus on only Uzbek language, or was there kind of a backlash against Russians living there?
No, we don't have like discrimination or something like that, but we start changing language, and then even our alphabet, we change from Russian alphabet to Latin alphabet. Is new language. Uzbekistan right now, we're using Latin alphabet.
Which is what we use for English.
Right, which one we use in English.
Okay. Did many of the Russians who were living in Tashkent and other parts of Uzbekistan leave the country after you became an independent country?
Yes, when we become independent, so many people has left the country. Like we have a bad economy.
Oh, that
and
was
people
okay.
is like most of them Russian economy better than from us, and then they go move to Russian for the living, and they left the country.
And then how did life change for you and your family? Was it better? Was it worse? Was the economy, the economy you said was kind of bad, but were there more freedoms that you had, or what do you remember changing?
If be honest with you, we have a dictator, president coming
up.
You
went
dictator.
From the frying pan to the fire.
from the one on, we go to another dictator worse and worse start life.
Was he the one who had been you called him the secretary or the?
Yeah, first secretary.
Okay. So he had sort of was a kind of a religion or a leader of the country before, and then he kind of became the
president,
de jure leader. And Karimov, his name was Karimov. Islam Karimov. What was it like under him? What you call him a dictator? What was some of the things that he did to make life difficult?
He take everything, he take all businesses, everything he take under his control.
under his personal control or under the government control?
It's like personal. Government, he take like personal.
Oh. Well, under the Soviet Union, it was already under government control, but it's more personal. Work.
Yes, he take like personal.
Okay. Well, let's take a little short break here and get back, and I want to dig into this a little bit more and then hear more about your story. So you're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. I'm here with Hassan from Uzbekistan, and we were talking about the transition from Soviet rule to independence in 1991. And Hassan was talking about the what he called the dictator Islam Karimov and how life kind of changed under that regime. What else can you tell us about life under him?
Under him is bad life. Even Uzbekistan from the Soviet Union, we most of them farming cotton.
Uh-huh.
Right. Even from third grade and up, always on the full time, they have to go to work at the cotton farms.
Is that what your father did and your family?
No, my father bring farm, but we're doing with the potato, tomato.
Potato and tomato, okay.
Melon, all that.
That was under the Soviets. So was that a state farm, a government farm, or was that a personal?
No, that is
private.
Government farm.
Government farm, okay. So when Karimov took over, did your family keep that same farm, or did something change with that?
No, they start changing. No more government farm. Most of them who work around the Karimov, they take everything private,
okay.
And then we have to rent. By every year, you have the same land.
Oh.
They sell you for the months, like for 7-9 months.
So you're
after that, they're going to take back. You have to every year buy the land.
So after a certain time, do you own it or do you? Never can be owned. Okay. So that really didn't change. Talk about this Andijan event that happened in, was it 2005 or something like that?
Something like that.
There was a kind of a revolt that ended badly. What happened?
Yeah, that is Andijan happening from the, like how I tell you, from dictator, and people don't have even paycheck. We take paycheck from the 8 months before. For these days, they give you for 8 months.
So they were slow on, because of economic problems or corruption?
It is more corruption.
Okay.
It's not economic problem, it's more corruption.
So it was going, the money was going
for the,
where it shouldn't go.
And Andijan start pupils just growing, ask about the paycheck. Can you give us real that time? A lot of pupils, they don't know about the even meat. Only on the TV you can see the meat. Pupils don't have even only eating rice or just the bread at the house. Nothing else. Soup, for example.
Because of the economic problems.
And then population starts slowly stand up, get for meeting, say hello, give us our paychecks. And then government seem, it is on the Andijan, it is around three states, how you call it, the... It is
districts or
three districts that the more population from Uzbekistan, like 50-60%
mm-hmm.
on that three districts. And if they start meeting, it can be all country. They can do it.
Because that was the majority of people living, or the largest amount of people living here.
Yes.
So that kind of set the tone.
And then they start more and more. They go in over 10,000 people go to a meeting for the few hours. And government see he can stop it. And then how he start thinking, we have one of the bad prison from the Soviet Union time. And then on the TV coming up, right away say somebody run from the prison, we have to kill him, he's very bad. And he steal some from the security gardens, they still Kalashnikov gun something, and then he have a gun, we have to shoot him, and he is right now in meeting, and the government starts shooting for the meeting people. They say on the all just die couple people, but usually original people, it is over 5,000 people die on that meeting.
Was there any kind of a punishment for that, or any kind of after effects that were was this kind of hidden by the government, or did people know about it, or what happened after that?
After that, too many people go to jail.
And did they start being more proactive with paying people on time, or was that, did that at least help with getting people paid? Did that
No, nothing changed.
Okay.
It is changed. Just have everything start changing after 2016 when we have a new president.
Mm-hmm.
He is coming up, and right now he's changing all rules.
Well, so that's, okay, back to this, what you just talked about, this Andijan massacre. That kind of influenced you, I think, to get involved with opposition groups, and that led to you eventually coming here. So let's talk about that. Yeah, after you finished school, you joined the military.
Yes.
Because I guess you had to.
I must.
And then tell me how you got involved with this opposition political group and how that led to other things.
I go military, and after military I start work on military and meet some person. He been ex-minister this time about culture minister, and he's a book writer, and he invite me work with him like bodyguard, like I start
as a bodyguard.
Yes, and then I start work with him, and then he invite me to party. Our party name is ERK.
E-R-K.
E-R-K, yes.
And what did that party...
It is First Democratic Party in Uzbekistan.
Okay. Was that illegal at the time when you got involved with it? Was it... Did the government want it to go away, or was it a recognized party?
That time's legal. Even these days, he's legal, but they start changing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Karimov, if somebody smarter than him, everybody spended his life on the jail. He don't want to be somebody smarter than him. And
so he wasn't happy about the ERK party?
No. And he put too many people from our party start putting jails. And...
Including you, right?
Including me.
How did that happen? Can you talk about that?
It is just how they come to house. Somebody knock. I open the door and say, we have to talk to you. Just let's go sit the car. And I sit. And then I don't know what's happening. I lost. When I wake up.
You lost consciousness?
Yes. And then when I wake up, I'm ready on the room. It is jail room.
And then? How long did they keep you there?
Oh, it is... I don't know.
Days, weeks, months?
No. It's over months. Months.
Months.
Months.
Okay.
Not only 1 month.
Are you comfortable talking about what happened to you there? A little bit?
Nothing nice happening. Everything
I know it's nothing nice.
Everything bad. Every day they beat you. Broke.
Broke ribs?
Broke ribs. And all bad things.
Were they trying to get information from you about the party? Were they beating you, like interrogating you?
Yes.
Okay.
They want to get information from us. Why I go to jail? Because I tell you, I work for this person.
Uh-huh.
His name is Mamadali Mahmudov. He just died 2 years ago.
Okay.
And he's the second person on this party.
Yeah.
And
you were his bodyguard at first.
Yes. And then I always with him. I know too many things. They want to get information. And then he, before that, he been one time in prison. Everything from prison in jail, he give the letters. I take out and give what we have to give for other person. And they know about that.
So they wanted information from you about him?
Yes, all the information.
Did you say he was in prison at the same time you were, or he was?
No, before than me, he go three times.
Okay, and where was he when you were in prison?
He's in prison.
He was in prison too at the time. Okay. All right. So that was not a good experience, obviously. And then how did they eventually release you? Did they?
No, I just run.
You escaped?
Yes, but when he's transferring from one to another one, when we stop, I just run.
Out. Wow, okay.
It's been winter, not like winter, like ending November.
Yeah.
Beginning winter, is ready snow, ice. I have only one short and then flips on the
shoes.
I just run to Kazakhstan.
Okay, so, yeah, I think you told me that you were living near the border with Kazakhstan. So you literally ran across the border.
Yes, I crossed the border to Kazakhstan. And from Kazakhstan, my neighbors move out from our street.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to the house and borrow from him some money and some clothes. I left to Moscow and I come to...
Why Moscow?
It is biggest office in Moscow.
Office for
EIOM.
EIOM, what is it? International Organization for Migration.
Yes.
You were hoping to
help get
go help. To a safe country.
I think and go to Muhammad Saleh, who is the organizer. Organizer for the ERC party.
Did ERC party have an office in Moscow?
No, they don't have it.
Okay.
We have an office in Uzbekistan that time.
Oh. Were you hoping to come to the United States or any, some other place where you would...
No, that time I don't think come to the United States. I just, after prison, so many months, and then you only thinking about the safe life.
Yeah. Were you able to contact your family and let them know where you were?
Later on.
Wow.
I just tell him I stay alive, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, and then how long were you in Moscow?
It was like 1.5 years.
And then you came from Moscow here?
Yes.
Okay, how did that happen?
We start like when I go to IOM office, they start making paperwork and then they sent me to UN office. I start make paper over there and then they start try to be find some safe country.
Did you have something to kind of prove your story, tell them that you were escaping persecution because of you were basically a political refugee then?
Yes.
Okay. Was it hard to prove that?
It is not so easy.
Yeah.
I make proof.
Mm-hmm.
I have a proof. And they start helping to me. That time, first, I start seeing like when I've been in Moscow, first help, right away, start help to me, United States, America.
Oh.
Like the from a Russian Federation, the UN worker, he's coming up, he said, we got some help for you. And they helped me with the rent apartment for the...
In Moscow.
In Moscow, yes. And for food, for stay. They start helping me from that time.
And then eventually you got permission to come here as a refugee, right, to the United States. What year was that?
2004 I come.
And then you came to St. Louis.
I come to St. Louis.
And right. Did you choose to come here, or is that just where they sent
no,
you?
No, but they chose it.
They chose.
They asked you, where do you live? And then they want to find you closer, like your climate. Or how you
oh,
like.
Uh-huh.
They want to find you same like
country. Is this sort of the similar climate to
yes.
Uzbekistan? Okay. Not too, well, we kind of get cold and hot. I think you told me you were the third Uzbek person in St. Louis.
Yes.
So there was not an Uzbek community here.
That time, no.
Were you resettled by one of the agencies here? International Institute or Catholic Charities?
Catholic Church.
Catholic Charities, probably.
Yes.
Okay. And did you speak English when you came here?
No, I don't speak English. I only know Russian and my own Uzbek language. And caseworker, Bosnian lady, her name is Rahima.
Uh-huh.
And she start help to me. She know a little bit Russian.
Uh-huh.
And she start help to me.
Okay. Boy.
Teach me life.
That must have been something. Why don't we... I don't want to start this. We're going to take a short break here right now. But when we come back, I want to hear about your life in St. Louis over the last 17 years. So you're listening to Stories of New Americans here at 101.9, 94.1. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Okay, welcome back to Stories of New Americans. I'm here with Hassan Pirmambetov from Uzbekistan, and we were just talking about how he came here to St. Louis in 2004?
Four.
Okay, what time of year was that? Was it winter?
Summer.
Summer, so
beginning summer.
You saw the hot St. Louis summer. Does it get that hot and humid in Uzbekistan too, like it does here?
It's hot, but not humid.
Not humid, okay. How was that at first? You must have been completely confused and lost. You didn't speak the language. You didn't know anybody. Everything was new. What were some things that happened?
I start feeling like, I don't know how I explain, like...
It's not like the movies.
Right. Like, you don't know, no understand language. You can talk for somebody. You see everybody like back on the days on the, like, we go to street, talk with the neighbors, sitting like, here I see him. No, you can go outside. You can talk.
Oh, yeah,
You don't know language. I see sitting... Neighbors talking, but I don't know it.
Yeah.
That's their language.
Yeah.
Great things. You can see so many nationality in here.
Yeah.
But you don't know the languages.
Yeah. Were you living in an apartment by yourself, or did they put you with other people at first?
No, I live by myself.
Did they give you furniture and things that you needed?
Yeah, they gave me some furniture.
Okay.
Some couch and bed. And food.
Okay.
Fill it up when I come, and then I start slowly, and then go to International Institute for a few weeks to take classes.
English classes?
English
okay.
classes. And then I can take longer. I have to survive my life, and then start looking for a job.
Okay. What was your first job?
My neighbors is Bosnians that time. The Bosnians, and they're working on Luisa Food Company. We make ravioli. They're making.
Uh-huh.
Most of them. And then we work on the night shift for cleaning.
Oh, cleaning the machines at night.
Yes, all machines.
Oh.
We have to clean, get ready till 6 o'clock.
Oh, boy. And how did you go to work? Did your neighbor drive you there?
Yes, my neighbor drive me, and I have to pay him like four people from our street work on the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Every week they're changing the cars. 1 week they, you have to pay for the gas money for... And then they take me and bring me back. And like that, I worked 3 months.
Did you learn English kind of just through working with other people too? Or maybe you learned Bosnian or Spanish because it was an international working crew, I guess. But did you learn English on the job?
No, I learned on the job Bosnian.
I was kidding, but you're serious.
No, I'm a serious. I learned in Bosnian. And then after 3 months, I find that the second Uzbek who before them, he worked on the restaurant.
And how did you find this other Uzbek guy in St. Louis? It's like a needle in a haystack.
On International Institute.
Oh.
I see him. And then he called me, you want to work on restaurant? And then I go like second shift. Like I say, yeah, I want. It's better than from night shift. And I go to a restaurant, start working in restaurant. And our server, most servers, it is students.
Mm-hmm.
From universities, colleges, they start teaching me slowly. I don't know language, but I work like, I know to have to cook or do it.
Uh-huh.
They start teaching me names first. about the food, this name, this order, you mm-hmm. have to make this, this. And then I started learning, and students teach me about, slowly I started learning English, and daytime I started work on construction.
Construction.
7 years nonstop, I work on the two jobs, daytime wow. construction, evenings, restaurant.
Mm. Wow. Did you ever feel any type of discrimination here, or anybody treat you differently because of your background?
No, if be honest with you, that's the only place where I don't see the this discrimination. I don't know, always they say discrimination. No, I don't see here any discrimination. People are so nice, always smiling face, say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Not everywhere say hello. I live in Moscow, where I, who teach us from Soviet Union, they the best, which one. But when I go to Moscow, I see the only worst things I have in my memorized from Moscow. Real Russians don't like our Asian peoples.
Mm.
They want to try to be like, use us for free.
Mm-hmm.
They want to put you on the, most of them like, they make you like monkey work.
Okay. Are there many Central Asian people living in Moscow?
They going to work.
Going to work. But you say they don't feel really welcome there.
No, they don't like it.
Okay. But you've...
And corruption too much. You can, like, you see right here, for I easily can go outside, walk outside. If you go in Moscow, it's not so easy to walk outside. Any police officer can stop you, can take you to jail, to up to 72 hours.
Because you were not a Russian citizen?
Right.
Or?
You're not a Russian citizen. You don't have a work permit. Like, they start everything, they can stop you. They want to take money from you.
Mm-hmm.
If you right there, at least you have to give $10 that time, I don't know, from $10 to $20.
Mm.
And then if you go like 1 mile, in 1 mile, you easily can spend $100, easy.
Just by paying?
Just to pay.
Bribes?
Right.
Oh boy. I hope we don't have that here. Okay, you said you worked two jobs for 7 years, construction and working in a restaurant. What are you doing now? What kind of work do you do now?
After that, I start learning CDL. I get my CDL and go work for trucks. And right now, after that, I start working. So these days I'm working on the truck. I have my own truck, own trailer. I'm happy for that. And then I go married. I have a wife, family.
Mm.
I just buy the house, and I'm so happy. I'm glad.
So you've been here for 19 years, 2004. So you came, no English, probably no money. How much money did you have in your pocket?
No,
when you
I
came?
Don't have it. My neighbor, Wahid, the Afghanistan guy, he gave me $20 for my cigarette. He said, I'm smoking. I don't
well, that wasn't a good thing to give you money for. But from that, you now have a wife and a child, and you say you just bought a house and you're doing well. And that's, could you have done that in Uzbekistan or Russia?
No, you can. It's so hard to do it. You can do it, but so hard. Most of them on the outside, how I can say, you have to be too many cousins working on the high level jobs.
You have to know somebody.
Right.
Well, how do you think your life would be if you were in Uzbekistan now? What would you be doing, you think? Would you be?
Even I can tell you right now, I don't know. If I go to military, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, retirement, that's all.
Is your family still working on a farm?
No, nobody right now working in the farm.
Okay. Do you have family still there that you're in contact
with?
Yeah,
I have two brothers and then three sisters.
Have you gone back to Uzbekistan?
No, I visit a neighbor close to, how I tell you, Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Close to us, Chimkent City. In Kazakhstan, and then I married in Kazakhstan, my wedding in Kazakhstan.
Would it be dangerous for you if you went back there to Uzbekistan now?
Now, no.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go that time, Karimov stayed alive. He just died.
Yeah, Karimov died 2016. So now the new president is a little bit better.
It's a lot of better.
A lot better.
Take out too many.
Okay.
Too many.
Do you think you would ever go back to live there then if the government is...
No, I don't think I'm going to go to back to leave.
Okay.
It is right now, I'm ready. I love my country where I'm living. He gave me everything.
America.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go somewhere.
Wow.
It is really my country.
So you feel more American or Uzbek now?
No, I feel like more American.
Wow.
Even like my friends go visit Uzbekistan, if you go somewhere, they look for you a different way.
Mm. They think you're American now.
Right.
And they think you're rich.
Yes.
And they want money.
Something like that.
Well, how big is the Uzbek community now in St. Louis? Is it more than three?
Oh, we have right now over 100 families.
Wow.
And then, yeah, we don't have even like community center. We're looking on that.
Yeah, talk about that. You said that you're looking to establish some kind of as Uzbek community center. I think that's a great idea.
We already start the donation for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe soon, maybe we find that we're going to open Uzbek community center. We want to show up our culture, foods, like international holidays we want to go to.
And you already have an Uzbek community association in St. Louis?
Yes, we have already.
Okay. And do you have festivals or Independence Day parties and things like that? Any Uzbek restaurants in St. Louis?
We don't have Uzbek restaurants.
Okay. Do you think that might happen sometime?
Maybe happen. Why not?
Mm. What are some typical Uzbek foods?
Oh, our first national food was a pilaf. Posh. Yes.
Kind of like me, I call it rice pilaf. It's rice.
It's like fried rice, but it's not fried rice, but easy for you to understand, like fried rice. Looked like fried rice.
Okay.
But making different way. Uh-huh. It is first nationality, our food.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of different kind of manti, samsa, kebab, tandoor kebab.
Kebab. I think people know
kebab.
That. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It is too many different kind of foods and nice and tasty.
Mm-hmm.
You have to try this.
What is the best thing about living in America, and what's the worst thing or the most challenging?
Most thing, America is one of the great country. How I see, how I understand, it is choice and opportunity country. He give you all choice opportunity. If you want to do something, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just you have to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They give you all chance.
Yeah.
If back on the days we have a same opportunity, same choice in Uzbekistan, maybe I'm going to be right now different person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we don't have it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
So we don't give you, you have to work hard for it. I think a lot of immigrants appreciate opportunities maybe more than some of us native born people do. You're willing to work hard toward a goal because you wouldn't have that opportunity back home in some countries. Even if you did work hard, you still wouldn't succeed. But here you have I've heard this so many times from people that come from other countries. They see opportunities where I might see despair.
No, I appreciate for this country. No. Even you work hard, like they give you on the time paychecks. You wanna go to school, they give you a chance. Even they give you loans. You can get that. Mm-hmm. Not any country. Mm-hmm. Many countries give you these chances. Even go to university is so hard.
Yeah.
It's not so easy. Here is easy. If you want to do it, everybody is hard. Life is not so easy. Even here, you want to work, you have it, everything.
Mm-hmm. So whereas back home, people wouldn't be paid on time, which led to that terrible massacre. But here, you know, if you work, you get paid. Hopefully that happens all the time, right?
Right.
You didn't answer my question about what's the worst thing about living in America. Is there something that is not so great?
If be honest with you, I don't see not something the worst. I don't see nothing.
Hmm.
Since I come here, I have only good my memorize. I see good things. I appreciate for America. God bless America from my heart. I love my country. Really.
I'm really glad to hear that. Have you had any challenging experiences or anything that was a little bit tough? What was the hardest part about coming here? Language or making friends or early days when you had to probably take three buses to work. What were some of the difficult challenges that you faced?
Like, what you mean from?
Well, so you, were there some things that happened that were really difficult and hard? For example, learning English must have been really hard because it's really...
It is. Language, my totally, totally different language. And then you don't know. Start learning is hard. It's not so easy. Maybe you go to school every day, like, maybe easier, but I learn outside, like, from the employees.
Did you ever think it was a mistake to come here?
No, I think that is my good luck in my life.
Okay.
I don't say it's a mistake, no. Maybe just a good luck. Just a luck.
That's great. Well, maybe I can finish with one question for you. What message do you have for Americans or St. Louisans? What would you like to say if you could talk to people in St. Louis about either American life, America, or your experience in America? What would be your message?
My message is going to be, life is all around the world is so hard, but in America, a lot of easier from the other countries. You have, guys, too many opportunities, too many choices. Just try to move forward. You have this chance. Take advantage from your life. You have a chance on that. You can take schools. You can take, even you work hard, you're going to make what you want to do.
Okay, so the American dream is still alive.
American dream still alive.
All right. Words to live by. Okay, Hassan, thank you so much for this really interesting interview. I really enjoyed it. And I'm really glad that your life is going well now with your family and your career.
Thank you for the invite me. God bless America. I love America.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, you've been listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1. Please join us next week. Thank you. The thing is hard.